Welcome to the Experience Darden podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Emily Kelly. Emily is a second-year student in our full-time MBA class of 2021, and she is also the president of the Black Business Students Association. Emily and I recently connected via Zoom to talk more about her background, how she decided to pursue an MBA, what led her to Darden, what attracted her to the BBSA president role, and so much more. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here's my interview with Emily Kelly. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. I have to tell you, we had another second-year student, Miranda Guerrero, on the podcast. And after the episode, she sent me an email. People you need to have on the podcast. Your name was on that list. She was so complimentary of you and said, you have to have Emily here. And I'm so glad that you are here and that we were able to set this up. So thanks for doing this.
Oh my gosh, I feel special. I'm going to send her a text. Miranda is absolutely one of my favorite people at Darden. We were in Section B together, and she's definitely one of my closest friends here. So that like warms my heart.
All right. So, well, before we get to the substance of talking about your background and how you got to Darden and all these kinds of things, just want to check in. How are you doing? You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. The world is kind of imploding around us, but I try to stay grounded in the day to day and focus on what I can control. I've picked up a lot of random habits in the pandemic, so I have a paint by numbers that I'm working on right now, as well as a puzzle, watching an unhealthy amount of really good TV shows. So finding ways to cope and stay optimistic and joyful.
I think that's great advice for 2020, the year that just won't quit. Gosh, just when you think, what else could happen? We find ourselves in these situations. And so yeah. Focusing on what you can control is good advice for right now. I have to ask, you're painting by numbers. What's the scene you're painting?
Oh, yeah. So it's not anything grand. It's just kind of this rainbow lion. Don't ask the rationale. Like, it's just... I've had better images that I've seen it, but I like it because it's actually very nuanced, and so I like that it's going to keep me busy for a bit longer than the normal.
I can understand the appeal of painting, coloring, anything that kind of takes your brain somewhere else, puzzling. So all good COVID-19 quarantine hobbies. So again, thanks for taking time out for the podcast. And can I start all these conversations at the same place? Tell us a little bit more about your background and what you did before coming to Darden.
Yeah, so I spent my career before Darden working in the education and nonprofit sectors. Most recently, I lived in Atlanta for about 3 years. And prior to that, I was in DC. I kind of stayed in the area after college. I attended Howard University, proud Bison and HBCU alum. But yeah, so I have really been motivated to support students and schools and school leaders. And so came back to Darden because I felt like, and talking to a lot of my managers and sort of people that I looked up to in the field, they all had advanced degrees, and business school felt like the right fit for me. At one point, I was contemplating a doctoral degree, and I was like, I don't think I want to be a researcher. I also contemplated law school, and wasn't quite sure like if I wanted to do policy work. But yeah, business school ultimately felt like the best direction for me.
So I'm curious about an MBA. How did it first get on your horizon? You mentioned considering these other paths, so graduate school related paths. How did an MBA become one of them?
Yeah, actually, so in my job working at an education nonprofit in Atlanta, I actually ran a professional development program for school superintendents. And one of the great participants in that program was a Darden alum. And she was a school superintendent, obviously, but in talking to her and thinking about like just the MBA experience, what you get out of that, but then sort of the long-term benefits of like the degree. It felt like okay, this is an experience that sort of matches what I'm looking for at this point in like my career arc.
What about Darden specifically resonated with you? Certainly sounds like you were familiar with the broader area, having gone to college in Washington, D.C., but about Darden appeal?
Yeah, so when I started kind of like the research process of business schools, like I prioritized schools that had dual programs in either education or policy, and so Darden was like immediately on my radar. And I wanted to go to school in the South. I was born and raised in the South, in South Carolina, and knew that ultimately, like, post-school, wanted to, like, be in the Southeast region. It kind of checked off most of the boxes on my list.
Well, that's great. So what ultimately got you here? I know you probably had options, and you were looking at probably many things. What was the thing that put Darden over for you?
Yeah. So I felt like you should go after the themes that make you uncomfortable foremost. And I knew that Darden would push me in a way that other places wouldn't. I'm very introverted. I hate public speaking. And I felt like I'm also like very type A. Like I like to things in a particular order and like, you know, I'm super organized. And I felt like Darden would help me to find my voice through the case method and also really grow more comfortable like operating in ambiguity. I think those have been my most immense takeaways from my experience here as a student so far. And then I also didn't want to kind of like be a little fish in a big pond. And I like that Darden has really smaller class sizes where I could build meaningful relationships with not only my peers, but like faculty and like administrators at the school as well. And that's definitely proven true in my time here. And so I like that I'm a part of like this very close-knit community where I actually know people, they know me, and I can like, you know, I feel seen and included.
Now that's great to hear. And just talking with DSA folks this year about what the goal is for the DSA. Everybody feels included and loved, I believe is what they said they were about. And I thought that was so great just to hear them talk a bit more. No small plans, certainly, but that's, I mean, it says a lot about the community. I want to take a step back though. The self-awareness to say, hey, look, you know, I'm maybe a bit more introverted. I wouldn't be naturally inclined to speak up. And then to say, from a developmental standpoint, to choose an MBA program where you will be an active participant in your learning, that takes a lot of courage. Did you think about it in those terms? You just said like, look, this is something I have to do. I wonder how you kind of got to a point where you both knew that about yourself and then wanted to directly confront that.
Yeah, it came up in a performance evaluation with one of my managers who was actually a recommender for my application here to Darden. And I've been very grateful in my career that I've been managed by a lot of women, particularly women of color. And so, you know, she had this in like my notes in my like mid-year review to say that like, when we are in one-on-one conversations, kind of just doing our normal check-ins about, you know, tasks and updates and stuff, you have very insightful things to say. And then when we're in larger meetings with, you know, more inclusive of the broader team or like with executives, you're like very quiet. And I know you have like thoughts and ideas that you can contribute. And so I like want to challenge you to like be comfortable speaking up. And that was like very like awkward for me because I think part of it was just like, I think I'm very observant. I like to pay attention and like listen. But then I've always, in the last few places that I've worked, been the youngest team member. And so it's kind of intimidating to like, you know, kind of raise your hand and be like, oh, well, actually, I disagree with you, or like, here's a different point of view. But she really challenged me to see myself like as an executive and be like, you know, I think that you are clearly like on a path to being a really great leader. And so, you know, lean into that and, you know, feel comfortable, like more comfortable speaking up. So I kind of always keep that in the back of my mind.
Yeah, that's great advice. And it's great to have somebody push you in that way, but to do it in a way that's supportive and constructive. I think those are things that we all struggle with. You know, I was just talking with some folks on another podcast conversation about the difference between participating and contributing, right? So not just talking, but actually contributing something to the conversation, something of value, and realizing that you have something valuable to offer. That's, I think, a journey for folks.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, what is adulting? I think I ask myself that every day.
Well, if it's any consolation, I also ask myself that same question. I'm right there with you. So, so you come to Darden first year. All right. So what was that like for you? Were there learning curves, adjustments, anything that you learned that, gosh, you think would be helpful to our listeners out there who are thinking about this transition too?
Yeah, I was very intimidated coming into Darden and had to work a lot through that insecurity. Not that I didn't think that I belonged here or that I was incapable of like being successful, but it's just really daunting. Like, you go through the admissions process, you finally get that yes, you know, you make all the adjustments, you move, and then you're here on grounds and you just start to meet such dynamic and incredible people. And I felt very lucky, but then it was like also kind of like weighty. And so Case Method definitely helped me in really like finding my voice and like, you know, recognizing, you know, to what you were saying, like my ability to contribute. But first year was definitely hard, especially coming from a very liberal arts and sort of social sector background. But what I will say is that there was an outpouring of support of people who invested in seeing me through the finish line. And I feel like if I can do this, like anyone can do this, because finance and accounting and GEM or our econ classes, for people not familiar with like Darden lingo, but I definitely struggled in those. But people in my section, second years, even alum, just sort of like embraced me and like really helped me to navigate core and first year.
Now, that's great to hear. And I think that feels real to me as somebody who has the good fortune of talking to a lot of people about the adjustment. The journey, the arc that you just described, seems like a universal one just across these, you know, however many podcast conversations at this point. So we talk about people coming to the Darden and, you know, they obviously feel like they've accomplished a lot. They got into a top business school or getting ready to start. Then they start meeting people and they're like, oh my gosh, everybody is so talented and so bright and all of this. And so very humbling experience. But then you realize that also these people are very generous of their time and they want to help you out. And that's the people both here in Charlottesville, but also further afield, you know, alumni included. And so this very generous community, very talented, but also people who realize, you know, we'll all get through this together and I'll do much more if we work together. And so what you described certainly resonates as kind of a bit of a universal arc, I think.
Yeah. And then it's like, once you start to talk to people in those moments of struggle, it really affirms like, oh, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. Like, there are other people that are equally feeling the brunt of what I'm experiencing. And so you can find kind of like solace in that as well.
I love that point, and I'm so glad that you made it, because I think it takes vulnerability. It is not easy to be vulnerable oftentimes in graduate school environments, particularly ones where you have really talented folks. There's the temptation to feel like you have to act like you always have it together. And I think it's really important from a leadership standpoint to be willing to be vulnerable and to say, hey, you know, this is not easy for me, or I'm having a hard time right now, or is anybody else having a hard time with X, Y, or Z? I think that's a critical skill. And I was glad to hear you make that last point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I also will say, through being vulnerable in that way, just in the conversations I've had with the students here on the podcast, by being vulnerable in that way, they do find that they are not alone and that there are a lot of people who are right there with them. And so it's this very affirming, empowering thing. And I think that's all part of the MBA journey at the Darden School. So you are also a leader now of a student organization, BBSA, a Black Business Student Association. We've had past BBSA leaders here on the podcast. Excited to have you here as well. For those people who are just getting up to speed on the many student organizations at Darden, they're over 50. Tell us a little bit more about what BBSA is, what it's about, and what the organization does.
Yeah, so BBSA is one of the many affinity organizations here at Darden. We sort of represent the Black student community, or like the community of students of the Black diaspora. And I would say there are kind of three areas of emphasis that define like what we do. So we obviously like partner with admissions to help to increase representation of diverse students and Black students in the full-time MBA program. And then, you know, once you're here, we like try to like build a really strong and supportive community to help people navigate the different facets of the journey. So recruiting, academics, and then just sort of finding your footing, like, you know, making sure you're feeling, you know, fulfilled like as an individual as well. And so encouraging like wellness and like being social and like, you know, being proactive. And then thirdly, I would say bridging connections to alumni and getting alumni plugged into the community so that, you know, there's kind of this cyclical continual investment. And so I'm really excited to be leading the organization this year. BBSA definitely meant a lot to me in my first year, which was a key driver in, you know, wanting to step into this role and just kind of reach back to pull people forward in the same way that others did for me.
People have very full plates at Darden. I think that's one of the truths. People are, school is challenging, but folks are doing a lot in addition to just going to class. And how did you decide, you know what, I want to be a leader in this way. I want to be the president of this student organization. How did you decide to take the step?
It was really kind of just reflecting on my own experience and then experiences of like some of my Black friends here in the program and wanting to figure out a way to alleviate or mitigate similar like things happening for the incoming class. And so like wanting to be responsive and reactive to that. And I think, yeah, that was probably the primary impetus, but definitely saw my second year as an opportunity to grow as a leader and, you know, get experience managing a team. But yeah, those are probably like the two kind of key ways. And I think what's fun about being a leader in second year is like getting to collaborate with all your friends across like other clubs. And so BBSA works a lot with HAND and like Dabo and a lot of other great organizations here at Darden. And so it's like cool to like plan events and like activities with like people who you truly call your lifelong friends. So
it does seem like there's a lot of cross club collaboration. I think you make a good point. People just are working with their friends, basically. Yeah. Basically, is the way to think about that.
Running many enterprises with your friends.
Well, one of the things that's true, though, as a club leader, you have an opportunity to make an impact, right? So you put a stamp on an organization, say, this is what we should really be focused on. What has been your agenda or the leadership board's agenda for BBSA this year?
Yeah, I think once we came into our roles, it was kind of the onset of the pandemic. And from the start, I think we recognized that there's a lot of planning that we can do, but it's probably going to go out the window. And so we knew that we needed to kind of be nimble and adaptive and really try to explore relationships with the incoming class, like very early on. And so we did some outreach over the summer to get connected to the incoming students. And then Darden had the extended admissions process. So a lot of people were continually being admitted over the summer, the late summer months, and even into the fall for the J term. And so just as soon as people were getting admitted, just reaching out and getting plugged in and connected and really trying to design supports and like fun programming to like help people navigate being in this unique hybrid environment of learning. But I would say an event that was truly special for us as a club was an event that we held in September in partnership with HAN called the Case for Inclusion. And it intentionally happens in early September at the kickoff of the recruiting cycle to really sort of set intention around the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and put that on the forefront of people's minds as they're exploring career possibilities. Because ultimately, like, we're the leaders of the future. And if we don't have an orientation around these issues and a commitment to addressing them, then like these kind of persistent inequities we see will like just keep going and going. And so there's opportunity to break those cycles. And so it was a really fun event that we got to bring in our corporate partners across our clubs and bridge connections to the current students, first years and second years, to curate really courageous conversations around what's happening more broadly here in the US, but then, you know, what is the role in business in addressing some of these kinds of challenges? And so I would say I was really proud to be a part of that event. And I think it's definitely like an impact that we were able to make in the community here.
I would say so. Were there opportunities, challenges with delivering that event in a virtual environment this year, or a more virtual environment? One of the things we've learned at admissions is, you know, one of the great things about doing online events is that all of a sudden everybody can come, whether they live in the area or not. It doesn't really matter. Everybody, if you have access to the internet, you live in the area, so you can come to our webinars, you can come to the online events. But I imagine there were also some challenges. What was that like this year?
Yeah, so it was funny. Over the summer, we were like truly optimistic that somehow, some way, we might still be in person, and then like truth finally set in with us and we're like, okay, yeah, like we're making the call for it to be virtual. But to your point, it did expand the possibilities of what we could do, because travel and like getting to Charlottesville is often like a barrier for a lot of companies. And so we were able to have a greater representation from all the firms, because they could just pull people from anywhere and just log on. And so we had a higher volume of participating individuals from all the companies. And then we could accommodate more students. And so I was really proud of our like overall turnout for the event. And I would say like the biggest challenge was sort of like navigating the breakout room situation with Zoom. Because we followed the instructions of like trying to preload all the lists in that was supposed to make it seamless. And then, you know, in true fashion, you have the meetings live, you're trying to separate everybody into their respective rooms, and it doesn't work. And so we're just like manually trying to assign the correct corporate partners and then students to the right rooms. But ultimately, like, it all worked out, and people were really inspired by the case that we used. So that's kind of been a trend of the event, that a group of students actually write the case that's used during the event. And so really excited to kind of pass the baton to the next class and hear what they come up with in terms of the case.
I will say, for anybody who's gone to any kind of online event recently that has a breakout room function to it, say thank you to the AV person that is in the background making all that happen. You may not necessarily appreciate it until you actually have to do that with a whole bunch of people online and like looking at you saying, all right, it's time for the breakout rooms, particularly if you're trying to be intentional about it. Tell us a bit more about the case. I'm interested in hearing a little bit more high level, if you feel like it's possible to do, and it's tough to summarize sometimes.
Oh yeah. So this year we wrote a case focused on tech. And so the protagonist was a burgeoning Afro-Latina product manager at a major tech company, and was really struggling to assimilate into the culture at the firm, and had an awkward encounter with a colleague who she had, the one colleague that she had built a rapport with, and is brought into a kind of brainstorming meeting to what she thinks bring her expertise around product development. But really they want to kind of hear if what they're attempting to do with this product is kind of like PC or like culturally competent. So it was a very great dialogue around that, because I think I personally, and then a lot of other people, have felt like, are you bringing me into the room because you like appreciate like my expertise on this issue, or like do you really want to hear my point of view as like a woman or a Black person or like some other facet of my identity, which can feel sometimes demeaning.
I can understand that. I can imagine there was a great conversation around that. And it's fun to hear the students write the case and come up. The idea, do you sort of, is it, you know, informed by personal experience or from, you know, recent events, something that's been on your mind? I mean, where does it come from? It's sort of a collection of, we think this would be a great opportunity to have a conversation. Where does the idea come from?
Yeah, so we started with kind of like reflecting on the case from last year, which was also really interesting and good. It was about a student in their internship thinking that they were going to ultimately get a full-time, like convert to a full-time offer. But then at the end of the summer, we're told that they wouldn't be getting an offer, although for the entire summer, they had been getting like positive feedback. So they were like really confused around the sort of disconnect and like, okay, well, I thought I was performing well. And then ultimately you don't get the offer. So that was fun to unpack. And so, yeah, we just kind of like got together a handful of us that were on the planning team and reflected on that case again. And then just kind of like things that we had dealt with, and the issues in the case kind of like elevate it as a common theme. And so we kind of just leaned into that.
Well, that kind of, I appreciate your sharing more about that. And it's been a busy fall. I know there's a lot going on. We talked about the academic experience here as we've adjusted to more virtual and what's called hybrid class delivery. We talked about the hybrid classes here on the podcast, where you have some in-person participants, some virtual participants, all in the same class session together. I wonder how things are going right now, Emily. You doing okay? How's class?
Class is good. So I've been doing classes like primarily virtually, and that's mainly out of laziness, not like any other kind of driving factor. But yeah, I think everyone's just approaching it with a lot of grace, and so you expect for there to be technical hiccups, but you know, people kind of like take things in stride and recognize and acknowledge, okay, like it's gonna happen, my Zoom is crashing, can we switch to Teams? Like I think it's made us all very flexible, but it can be tough, especially like I miss a lot of my international friends. Many of them have traveled in March for spring break, and then like weren't able or haven't been able to like return to the States. And so, you know, I feel for them that are in like these erroneous time zones that are still like logging on for class. Like my classmate Mikhail, he's in Georgia right now. Today's his birthday actually, but we were in a group project, and I felt bad because it was like, I think like 6-ish PM here and like 4 AM there, but he was up in, you know, doing it. So I think that's kind of what makes Darden special, is that people just kind of rally around each other and, you know, make the best of strange and uncertain times.
That's been a common theme, just talking with people about the adjustment. It's certainly an adjustment. It's a big pivot, as people talk about. And, you know, I think your point about grace is a good one. You know, it's, nobody's trying to be perfect right now. I don't think, well, it sounds like a foolish aspiration. We're all trying our best. And so I know that the faculty have put a lot of energy into the classes, and really care deeply about how students are experiencing their learning experience. And so they're supported by a tech team, and it's a very much, you know, students and faculty coming together for these classes. And so I think what you just shared certainly is familiar from some of the other conversations we've had here on the podcast. I want to talk a little bit about your career goals. Have they changed? Have they evolved over your time in the MBA program? Is what you want to do now what you wanted to do when you started?
Yeah, so I have been reflecting on this a lot over the last several months, and I don't think that I've arrived at true clarity or a direction, but I'm embracing that. I think that's perfectly okay. When I came into business school, I really wanted to make a career switch and get private sector experience. And there were a couple of ways I was thinking about that, either through consulting, which you get like exposure to a breadth of industries and sort of business challenges, or doing sort of like general management rotational program, where you kind of get to go deep at a company, but get exposure to a lot of different functions. And I haven't completely like written off like either of those pathways, but because my heart is always in education, I've been thinking deeply about what our school system looks like right now, particularly when you think about P-12. And there's a lot of learning loss that's happening, especially in distressed communities. And so it's kind of been on my heart to think like, coming out of school in the next several months, like, where am I really gonna be able to make an impact? Like, where am I really needed? And so have been thinking a lot around the sort of trade-off of going back into the education sector or kind of staying true to my desire to make a career switch.
Well, it is nice. You have some space to engage with those questions right now. You have folks to talk to, probably some classmates you could talk to about that, but career coaches and other resources available to you. So I'll say, Emily, you know, I think if anybody's been following the news, the point about education and inequities and disparities feels real right now. Think about, gosh, just something as simple as, well, we think of it as simple, but it's not. Access to the internet, you know, or having a quiet place to study, and or people, you know, at home to sort of help you with your school. I mean, whatever the case may be. I mean, everybody's situation is very different right now. And some of these things are radically different for some students. Is COVID-19 shifted some of your thinking about this?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's definitely amplified a lot of the challenges, but also like sort of carved out a lot of opportunities. And I guess I can talk a little bit about my internship quickly, but I had the opportunity to intern with a niche consulting firm that focuses on school finance. So we support higher education institutions and schools and sort of like charter networks around budgeting and finance and sustainability. And I learned so much over the summer working with several districts trying to plan an annual operating budget when you literally have no operating plan. Like you're getting real in time information around like reopening or not reopening, all the politics and sort of bureaucracy around that. And there are a lot of great things that can come out of blended learning environments. And COVID has, I think, challenged a lot of districts and schools to think about it as an opportunity rather like than like being upset about how it's changing what's usual. And so, yeah, I'm optimistic for what innovation can look like in the future, but definitely also recognize that this is a very difficult time for parents, students, educators, people on the front lines. Like it's hard.
Yeah, my mom taught school for 40 years, roughly, in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, in my home state, North Carolina. So I asked her this summer, and my mom, you know, once a teacher, always a teacher. And I asked my mom, I said, Mom, would you want to be teaching right now? And her answer was, not right now. And I mean, she has such passion for it. And growing up around that, I think anybody, you know, I have such deep appreciation for teachers, but it's complicated right now. It's hard. I think about leading Zoom classes and what that must be like, particularly if you have the little ones. Try to get
a
six.
I know. It's like, how do you have a four-year-old on a tablet trying to do virtual school? It's insane. But it's
tough.
People are doing it.
That's right. And, you know, you make a good point from the financial standpoint. I think one of the conversations has also been, you know, there's a lot of cost to reopening and getting schools to a place where it can reopen safely and have, you know, the kinds of materials, PPE, however you want to think about it, to make it a safe learning environment for students, teachers, staff. And so financially, there's a lot to think about here. I can understand how an MBA could be helpful to someone, you know, so I'm glad to hear you're thinking about that.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted on what my life might look like post-starting, but I'm enjoying the discovery process. You know, sometimes I do feel discouraged because I'm like not quite sure, but I think I'm getting closer to like the right thing, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there's one of the things I think that's interesting, we talked about this a bunch on the podcast, is when people think about MBA and career search, they think they have a year, less than a year. They think they have like 6 months, 9 months, whatever the first year of the MBA program is in terms of the career search process. And they think that that's really the time. The reality is you have 2 years, and then of course you have your whole life, you know, to kind of explore with this kind of stuff. But I always try to remind people here, it's a 2-year process, because I think we've had some really great second year students come on and say, you have 2 years. We cannot emphasize this enough to really.
Oh yeah. No, I can't even over like emphasize that. Yes, it's a 2-year process. And I think a lot of people sometimes feel like their most immediate role coming out of an MBA or coming out of Darden is like so career defining, or like, you know, like I got to get the dream thing, or, and I mean, that's good if that happens, but I think you should really see it as a learning opportunity and a launch pad, like a sort of developmental like chance to fill in gaps that you identified in school, explore something that you're interested in the same way that you approach like the internship. So I think like level setting with ourselves is a helpful exercise that like, yes, it's important and like you want to try to get it right, but sometimes people go into full-time roles and they thought it was going to be this, and then it ended up being that, and they like made a pivot after a year or 2 years, and that's okay. So I like appreciate being able to like talk to alums that kind of affirm that experience that like, yeah, you couldn't have told me coming into business school while I was at Darden that this wasn't like what I was meant to do, or like, you know, but once I got there, it wasn't what I expected. And like, I've had to pivot. And so, yeah.
Of course, your first job after the MBA program is not your last one. So
yeah.
You do
you have a whole career.
And I think it's such a good point, because there is so much energy around what are you doing, you know, post-graduation? And that's really just the start. And certainly not the finish. So what are you looking forward to here? It sounds like you got a lot of sort of self-reflection and discovery going on, which is fantastic to hear. You're, you know, puzzling. You're also coloring, painting a little bit, watching some good TV. What are you looking forward to, though, in the coming months as graduation approaches?
This sounds like very trite, but honestly, rest. I think about when I started all of this, about 3 years ago now, I started the process of preparing for business school and applying. And I think I've expended a whole lot of energy. And it's been reciprocated for sure, but I think I am definitely just looking forward to things slowing down for a bit, a little bit of respite, and just taking a beat to like celebrate all of this?
I think that's a great point, because oftentimes I think when we have a lot going on, we just feel like we're doing a lot. We never take that moment to sort of take a step back and say, you know what, this is really something, you know, I've accomplished all this, you know, I've done all this simultaneously, and just kind of have that moment to recognize that you've achieved something.
Yeah. I'm hoping that maybe travel might be safer next summer. So like I can do a small trip, even if it's somewhere here domestically, but just to like really have some time to myself to kind of revel in these last 3 years, because it's definitely been a wild ride.
I can believe that. I think we're all hopeful that by next summer, things may be a bit different and the world's a bit more open at that point. We collectively have our fingers crossed at this point. So, Emily, it's been a pleasure having you here on the podcast. We ask everybody pretty much the same last question, which is, what advice do you have for prospective students who are listening to this? Anything you'd highlight for them, you'd share?
Yeah. So my advice would be to not get hung up on the sort of indicators that people point to in the admissions process, like your GPA or the type of companies you've worked, the experiences you've had, your test scores, like all of those things are factors, but they don't define you. You are smart, capable, brilliant, interesting, all of the above, and that matters. Like having diversity and representation in business school matters, and so know that there is a place for you at some school and you're going to find it and it's all going to work out the way that it should. But don't count yourself out or self-select out. Give yourself a shot, because you can do it. If I can do it, you can do it.
I love all of those points. I could not have said that better. Give yourself the opportunity, you know, put together the application, put your hat in the ring and see what happens. You just never know.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, thank you again for your time. Hope you have a great rest of the week. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you for your candor here on the podcast. And, you know, I hope you stay safe and have a great rest of the semester.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you so much for having me. This is honestly the highlight of my whole day. It feels like a very good breath of fresh air. And I'm probably actually going to go get a breath of fresh air and take a walk now. But this is great.
And that was my interview with Emily Kelly, a second-year student in our full-time MBA class of 2021. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, at virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.